Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, joined today by Mr. Marius Ruart. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this one is, I guess in some ways you can consider it a light item. It's not the world's most important news, but it greatly amused me when I read it. And that is that the EFF is going to be getting a new MP, very likely, come the next election. It'll be their first white MP, and this is, in fact, the infamous, or famous, depending on your orientation, Karl Neuhaus, who, according to the IEC lists, is sitting at number 27 on the EFF's parliamentary list, which is a pretty high number. It means he's very likely to get into parliament. It's also been quite interesting comparing him to other people on the list who have not done nearly as well. Marius, you are having a look at this. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great breakthrough for race relations in South Africa, I think, if a white person is on the EFF list. Obviously, I'm being facetious. Karl Neuhaus has proven himself to be probably one of the most daft people in the country. And yeah, if you just, I mean, look at his record, I mean, he's been, he's been bust for all kinds of things, for lying, for committing fraud, all kinds of, he's not the kind of upstanding person you really want representing your political party in parliament. But yeah, we are. But it's also quite interesting. I see that two quite high profile people who became EFF MPs in the last year or two was Zwanele Manyi and former public protector Busiwe Mkhwebane. They're both quite a lot lower than Neuhaus. They're both at about, I think they're actually just they're right next to each other. I think Mani's about 40, Mkhwebane's about 41. But I think also what's very telling is Naledi Chirwa, who was an MP for the EFF. She was 30 on their list in 2019. She's now 200th. And if anybody's been following the news, Naledi Chirwa is the MP who got in trouble now for missing a couple of parliamentary sessions. And she had to write this groveling apology letter where she said she missed the sessions, even though she'd apparently asked for leave because her child was sick. And she had to then write this really groveling public apology letter. And she had to, as a fine, buy two EFF branded gazebos to the value of 10,000 rand each. So it's quite telling that somebody like Chirwa, who, I mean, obviously don't agree with the politics, but she seems like somebody who's fairly principled, fairly decent person, apart from being obviously a supporter of the EFF, gets kicked out of, well, not kicked out, but I mean, she's 200th on the list. Unless the EFF wins, basically, unless the EFF wins 100% of the vote, which is obviously awful. Let's hope they don't win that. But yeah, she's not going to make it back to parliament. And they're putting somebody like Karl Neuhaus, who, you know, apart from his politics, he's, you know, obviously I disagree with his politics, but he's shown himself to be he's a liar and he's committed fraud. I mean, he lied to, when he was short of money, he was lying to friends of his. I think Derek Hanekom came out and said, Neuhaus came up to him and said, no, he needs money. His mother just died, but he's going to get this big inheritance. You know, Hanekom lend him the money? And Hanekom was fine. Neuhaus even lied to him about when the funeral was going to be, because there obviously wasn't a funeral. And apparently, Derek Hanekom drove out to Clarksdorp or something for this funeral. When he got there, he couldn't found out there wasn't a funeral because the poor woman hadn't died yet. So it just tells you the caliber of person of Karl Neuhaus, and that he's quite high up on this EFF list is very telling.
Exactly. It just shows the state that the EFF is in, and that this is a party which is increasingly becoming, I mean, it's always been a bit of a personality cult around Julius Malema, but I think that tendency seems to have only been increasing at this point. All of the other personalities in the EFF are sort of being pushed to the side, often publicly humiliated. Many EFF members in provincial legislatures and councils and parliament just get fired left, right, and center. There's an enormous turnover of MPs in that party. And I really think that Julius Malema is damaging himself here by turning his party entirely into a party of sort of nodding yes men. That's the only reason I could ever think that you'd put someone like Neuhaus, apart from, I guess, the fact that he's relatively famous, so high on the list, is precisely because Malema believes that he will be loyal and follow orders and not talk back when he's told what to do, which I think is, you know, really bad sign for the long-term prospects of the EFF. As much as a cult of personality can get you some places in politics, if you completely destroy the structures of your own political party because literally no one of talent is allowed to rise up the ranks because they might be a threat to you, In the long term, you're really going to destroy your own political party. We shall see. But I have a feeling that if the EFF doesn't do so well in this upcoming election, if their growth is small or if they stagnate, this will be a very big part of the reason why. Okay, let us move on to our next story. Yesterday, Minister for Higher Education, Bladen Zimande, has revoked the registration of a number of tertiary education institutes, private ones belonging to EduCore. These include City Varsity, Damlin, Akesa, City Campus, and Lyceum College. This is apparently because these institutions failed to submit a proper financial audit in 2021-2022. And also there are various allegations against them as having poor quality of teaching and learning, lack of proper administrative support, corruption, bribery, exploitation of poor students, all sorts of things like that. So there's a number of things I think I want to talk about here. One of them, Morris, is that this, I think, always shows how the private sector is different from the way that government has done things. A government school can just endlessly fail, produce terrible results, not educate people for ages and ages and ages. And at worst, they'll get a intervention from the department where they'll have some sort of special courses done. And very often, a lot of people get off the hook or there's not much change at those schools. Whereas when the private sector messes up, there are very real consequences and there is change in the market. There's competition. There are other private tertiary education institutions out there which are, I think, very happy, even though this is very damaging to the lives of many of the students who are going to these institutions who are feeling probably quite ripped off right now, that those other private institutions may be able to snap those students up. But at the same time, it also worries me a little bit because here we see the ANC government being very quick to jump on the head of a private institution, private education institution that doesn't seem to be performing well, in a way that it never would on a public institution. What do you make of this, Morris?
Yeah, I suppose in a way it tells you the system's working. Obviously, it's if the accusations from the government's correct, then they've probably made the correct decision, yeah, by taking away the registration of these colleges and so on. It's obviously not very good for the poor people that are studying there. A lot of them are going to be, lose a lot of money and be put back a couple of years, which is obviously very unfortunate. But then, as I say, it shows you the system's working and is making sure that people who or organizations that aren't able to provide a service are then being stopped from providing that service. But I think you're exactly right. The public sector is held to a bit of a lower standard than the private sector. And there have been problems at a lot of universities, public universities around South Africa. UNISA comes to mind, where there have been problems where, curriculums haven't been done properly. There hasn't been marking. Places are running out of money and money is getting stolen. I mean, there's at Walter Sisulu University, I think it's the Vice Chancellor, Sakele Buchlungu, I think his name is, who had to get a bodyguard because people were wanting to kill him because he was cracking down on corruption and so on. So that's probably a bit worse than what's happening at these private colleges. But yeah, it's unfortunate. It's also that sometimes happens and it's obviously terrible for these people, but hopefully they'll be able to, or for the students rather, hopefully they'll be able to find other places where they can go study. And as you say, it's a big opportunity for other players in the market. Organizations such as Advertech and so on will probably going to be looking at this as possible acquisition targets. But I think what it comes down to, as you say, it's the public sector is held to quite a much lower standard than the private sector by the government.
Yeah, and if one of the complaints is a lack of professionalism from university lecturers and teachers, I can tell you that public universities are definitely not at all immune to that kind of stuff. I have seen and heard many things in my time at public universities that would suggest that, that there's a bit of a double standard here. But anyway, last story for today, and this is the West African nation of Senegal, which has had a successful transfer of power after an election that got pretty spicy, shall we say. And the main opposition leader was arrested and was in jail until, I think, about a month ago, just before the election was to take place. The outgoing Senegalese president, Macky Sall, has conceded defeat after losing the election to his opponent, Bassirou Faye. The outgoing president in his conceding speech said that the real winner here was Senegalese democracy. There have been a lot of fears in the run-up to this election that the government was essentially trying to stifle Senegalese democracy, crack down on it, and end it. But it seems at the end of the day, when the votes came in, the old president is stepping aside gracefully and conceding defeat, showing that it is indeed possible, even in pretty poor countries like Senegal, to have peaceful and successful democratic transfers of power. Maurice, what do you make of this?
Forgive me, I just need to correct you. Point out that Macky Sall was he was standing down as president, but his preferred candidate, a guy called Amadou Ba, was the guy who lost the election now. But I mean, Senegal has always been pretty stable in the region. It's always been fairly democratic. West Africa has always been a place where it's always quite unstable. There's been a handful of countries that are okay. So, I mean, Senegal is one of them. Ghana is another, I think. But a lot of the countries, there's been, especially a place like Nigeria, there's a history of military juntas taking over there. And we've seen recently places like Niger and Burkina Faso, and I think Mali as well. But, yeah, they've been military coups. So it's nice to see in a place like Senegal, who I'm open to correction. I don't think they've ever been governed by the military. I think they've always been governed by civilians. But good to see that a country like Senegal can have a peaceful transfer of power. And it remains to be seen how this guy does. Just reading a bit about him, he seems to be a bit of a left-wing guy. Not that that's always inherently a bad thing. Sometimes lefties can run places half decently, but we have to see if the Senegalese fellow will be able to. And he's also quite a young guy. He's only 44. So it makes me feel a bit unsuccessful, considering I'm also 44 and not likely to be president of any country anytime soon. But yeah, it's something to look at, and I think it's a good lesson for us. That we must also remember the current president tried to postpone these elections till about September, I think, for whatever reasons, and the judiciary said no, that's not going to happen, and the elections were run when they were supposed to. So even though the kind of establishment was trying to undermine democracy, democracy won out in the end, and that's definitely something to be applauded and celebrated. And yeah, let's hope that this new fellow can do what he needs to do in Senegal, and that it works out for the Senegalese people. But yeah, it's good to see a peaceful transfer of power there, and let's hope that things get better for not just Senegal but the region as well.
Right. And if the new guy doesn't perform, they'll be able to throw him out because the democratic institutions have remained strong. Okay, thank you very much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed the show. We will see you tomorrow. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.